So I'm here with Clover Stroud, who'll be talking about her new book, The Wild Other, at the Corpus Christi Lecture Theatre as part of the Oxford Literary Festival on Thursday the 30th of March at 12 p.m. So, hello Clover. So tell me about your book.
So the book is about a, well, the sort of centre of it is my mother, who had a very bad accident when I was 16, which it was a riding accident, and I grew up in the country but with horses, and I've had a very, very happy, very loving childhood. But then mum, I was in the first term of my A-levels, and mum dropped me at school and she went riding and she fell on her head and she took the full blow of the fall on her head. And she was left profoundly brain damaged, but she did live. But she couldn't care for herself at all. She couldn't walk or talk. So and she couldn't, crucially, she couldn't communicate in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I was 16 at the time, and that sort of, in it, I'm the youngest of five, and that sent me out on a series of, you might call them rites of passage, or fairly strange adventures, I suppose. I think as a reaction to what happened, because it was very, very extreme, and it was very traumatic, because mum was left in this very disabled state, but very much, you know, she wasn't able to look after herself in any way at all. And so, but she was still alive, so I couldn't grieve for her. And I sort of went on a bit of a journey of discovery, I suppose you might say, of growing up from being basically a child. I mean, I was 16, but I was, you know, a very young girl into a woman over that time. And I used, because I grew up with horses, I went off and I had various adventures around horses. And I, for example, went to live, when I was 18, I went to live in Ireland and lived with gypsies buying and selling horses.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back and I was at university in Oxford, where I mean, I absolutely love Oxford and feel very closely bound to it because of that. But then after that, I went to America because I had this idea that I wanted to find out if cowboys were actually real. And I went and worked on a ranch and rode bucking horses and learned how to rope and brand and had a very kind of wild time, I guess, with the cowboys. And so my life was becoming, I think I was pushing myself to further and further extremes. And during this time, I'd also had two children. I got married. I'd got divorced fairly rapidly after that. So by the time I was 27, I had a newborn baby and a toddler looking after them on my own and living down just off the Abingdon Road. And I was working as a journalist at this time. So the book is about this journey. And I ended up in Russia I had a boyfriend who lived in the Caucasus Mountains near Chechnya. And that's when I realised that my kind of appetite for adventure was fairly extreme. And I was surrounded by guys with Kalashnikovs and guns and knives. And that seemed fairly sort of normal.
Yeah.
So I think this reflects my inner turmoil, basically. And the book is about that trajectory and about that journey from the sort of place of quite extreme trauma to where I am now, which is not, you know, I've now got five children, and it was after my mother died 2 years ago that I realised that I could write about the experience. So that's what it's born from.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think the benefits and the pitfalls of memoir as a genre?
Memoir. Well, for me, I've been working as a journalist for 15 years when I wrote the book. So I had had the experience of, you know, turning around pieces very quickly and putting ideas together. So I knew how to write quite quickly. But it was also a real privilege to be able to go deeply into, you know, one subject. And because what had happened to my mum was very strange and it had gone on for such a long period of time, writing about her in this way enabled me to really process what had been going on. And I had actually tried to write a novel in the past about the experience, and I'd found it very, very difficult writing fiction. So with memoir, I love the fact that it is completely honest and it is completely real. And as a reader, I like reading memoir.
It's exciting.
I like knowing
that
it is a real experience. Of course, when we say real, you know, everything is tempered by memory and interpretation. So there is that element. But I think that the fact that as a reader you know that you're kind of going on a journey that has actually happened in real life, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real, you know, that's a real benefit of memoir. I suppose the problem is that you cannot put everything in. You have to create, you know, this isn't an autobiography, it's a memoir, so it has to have a sort of narrative arc. It has to have an emotional arc as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you inevitably leave some things out, and some people might say, well, that's editing, but it's what happened in the book is absolutely what happened in real life, as it were. I didn't put every single, you know, every single thing that happened to me throughout my life, because it would be quite boring, maybe, and it wouldn't be, it wouldn't, yeah, it wouldn't have that narrative, which is important.
Yeah. I recently read a book called The Last Act of Love by Kathy Rensselbrink. Have you read it?
Yes.
In what ways did that resonate with you?
I found Kathy's book almost... I thought it was an absolutely brilliant book, but because our experiences are very similar, I found it excruciatingly painful to read. Yeah.
I mean, it was painful for somebody who hasn't experienced that.
And very... she's a brilliant writer, and her brother was... in not the same state, but her brother was knocked down by a car, wasn't he? And he was in a sort of unconscious state, not completely unconscious, but almost unconscious for 8 years. And mum was in a similar-ish state for 22 years. So we have been through a very, very, very similar thing. And it really resonated with me. And I hope that people who enjoyed The Last Act of Love would enjoy my book as well. Although I think Kathy would... I met with her recently because I was aware that we do have this quite strange shared experience. And I think it's true to say that the way that we kind of dealt with what happened was quite different. And I suppose that's reflected in the books as well. But they're very kind of similar ideas, basically. And in fact, do you know the book called The Outrun by Amy Liprock? Kathy said to me, somebody should point out that The Last Act of Love and The Outrun are kind of like, my book is like those two books crossed with each
somewhere
other.
Somewhere in the middle. Yeah.
These sort of quite painful but transformative kind of journeys of discovery, I suppose, self-discovery.
Yeah. And do you think there's something... do you think there's something that needs to be done? Is that why that... So Kathy talks a lot in the book and also in interviews that I've seen with her about the fact that our sort of technological and medical care has advanced to such a stage that we can keep people alive who've had accidents like this, but that our emotional and ethical and moral care isn't advanced to the same stage. And do you think there's something that needs to be done?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a debate and dialogue that we need to have. I don't know what needs to be done about it, because it is obviously such a very, very complex area to legislate around. And actually 10 years ago, when Mum was still alive, I made a documentary with Channel 4 about this very issue, about when doctors are making end-of-life decisions, should the family be consulted? Because at the moment, medicine should be there to make life better. And I spoke to a philosopher at the time, actually, and she said medicine is at the moment being used to, you know, prolong, as it were, bad lives. Not bad lives, but bad lives of great suffering. Mm. And the ethical issues around that are really very, very complex. Mm-hmm. I certainly think that... I think that when doctors are making end-of-life decisions, they should be, as much as possible, looking at the wider family as well, because the consequences and implications of something like extreme brain damage in no way just affects that person. It affects, you know, the wider family. And what happened to my mum that day, almost a quarter of a century ago, still affects me every single day now. And if I can say this now, that if Mum had died, it would have been better for her and it would have been better for us, and the level of suffering that she went through was too extreme for her quality. She didn't really have a quality of life. So I mean, it's very, very complex, and it's only going to go on getting more complex as our kind of, you know, we become even more medically sophisticated. What we can do with medicine becomes more sophisticated,
because there's always the chance, I suppose, and you don't want to say that doctors should be more
sort of cavalier and not offer. No, of course not, because also my mum, you know, she was in her early 50s. She dropped me off at school. She was absolutely fine. I'd had a happy, nice conversation with her. Of course, when it came to the operations, we urgently wanted her to live. But the doctor who operated on her also knew when he'd gone into her brain, because he did multiple operations over the first few days, that he had seen catastrophic brain damage, and that she was of the age of somebody who, you know, who wouldn't probably make a very good recovery. So these are really, really muddy areas, you know. They're very, very difficult to there definitely is no black or white with this at all. And I don't know, I think medicine does cause a lot of suffering as well. It definitely caused a lot of suffering in terms of my family.
I suppose it's the black and white areas that make for interesting literature, and I guess that's why it's being talked about.
Yeah.
And that's why.
It's interesting that there are a lot of medical books out at the moment, or books by heart surgeons, brain surgeons. There's that one, When Breath Becomes Air, by a doctor who passed away.
Yeah.
But I think there's real interest in it at the moment, and a real sense that this is an important area of kind of debate, moral and ethical debate at the moment as well.
Yeah, definitely. So you said that writing the book has helped you work through the issues that you talk about in the book. What advice would you give to someone who wanted to write a memoir for a similar reason?
My advice would be to make as many notes as possible as you are going along, as you're going through anything, as you're going through life, to keep on making notes. It doesn't, and those notes don't need to be long streams of narrative about what's going on. Even just a few sentences, you know, if you're suffering, and it's very difficult when you're suffering as well, to force yourself to write things down. But that, the stuff that you can kind of capture on your phone or in a notebook, whatever, you know, however you like to do it, is absolute gold dust when it comes to,
like they say, to keep a diary, and eventually it'll keep you.
Yeah. And I think the thing of saying, oh, I must keep a diary, that could become quite, I mean, I've tried to do that and failed to do that. And I write in notebooks, and I'll be, you know, there'll be a shopping list, and then there'll be some notes about how I'm feeling, and then my children will scribble all over it. But I will be able to go back and find those fragments of, you know, of memory, and that's really, really important. And also to give yourself the time. I've thought very deeply about my mum for 22 years and the state that she was in, and I had written a lot as a journalist. So when it came to actually writing about her, I'd done a lot of the thinking time as well, and I don't think you can underestimate how important that time is to be thinking about something as well, and sort of allowing it to. One of the most exciting things about writing the memoir for me was as I was writing it, and I would be going about, you know, my daily business, whether that was my kids. I've got 5 kids, which is why a lot of my time is also taken up with them. But I would be, you know, driving them to school or making them supper or going for a run or whatever, and I would be thinking about the book all the time, and I was making connections in my mind about the sort of themes and the emotional kind of tenor of the book, I suppose. So it was very much living with me. And that was so writing was a process of bringing all those notes together and this kind of thought process that I was already in. But I was also really lucky because the book goes into my time in Texas and in Russia, and during that time I had kept lots and lots and lots of notes. That was partly as a journalist, I was writing about the places anyway. So when it came to writing the book, I could go back to these notebooks, which were, you know, in some cases 20 years old, and there would be dialogue and descriptions of people, and that was, as you can imagine, very, very, you know, really, really valuable. But my main advice is to do it, is to write. You know, don't be scared by what you're doing. It's always things that people say, oh, it's so hard to start, or it's so nerve-wracking to start, maybe I'm going to fail. Just start writing. And I've written 2 unpublished novels, if you can call them novels, before I got to, you know, this published book. So I think that fact of you learn to write by writing, you have to do it, you can't study it. And that would be my advice, I think, to get writing, whatever, you know, in a way, whatever it is, whether it's a memoir, whether it's trying to write fiction, whether it's doing reportage, just to sort of use the muscles.
Yeah. In what way does reading inform your writing?
Well, I go through different stages of what I want to read, I suppose. At the moment, I'm finding it really, really hard to read novels. I haven't read very much fiction for really quite a while, actually. Although I did this afternoon buy Jonathan Franzen's new book, because I really love his writing. But I found that when I was writing The Wild Other, I was reading quite a lot about local history and the local landscape to where I am, in order to sort of help my help me feel immersed in the kind of texture of the landscape around me. But I was also reading other people's memoirs because it's just technically quite interesting to see how someone like Cheryl Strayed, for example, you know, her book Wild, about the walk that she did through California, that was very interesting from a sort of technical point of view to see how she's working out flashbacks and how she's working out kind of the narrative structure.
Yeah.
So reading as much as possible is completely, you know, I couldn't imagine writing without having several different books on the go at the same time.
Mm.
And I'm not at all, you know, I hop between books.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quite bad about reading one book from start to finish.
Yeah.
But the thing of having lots of different things on the go at the same time, and I'm also always reading. I'm always reading T.S. Eliot. So I always have the waist around on me, and I find going to that kind of, even with poetry, you know, something like The Wasteland or The Four Quartets is quite difficult to understand what it's really about. But just reading the words is really, really useful, and the kind of beauty of the words. In fact, sometimes I read, you know, I'll read something like The Wasteland to my kids. They'll say, "Oh, they don't understand it." But I say, "Well, it doesn't really matter." But it's the kind of it's the kind of it's the melody that the words make, that to actually understand the sense of them. It's really, really important.
Yeah. Cool. So what's next for you?
Well, I continue to do my journalism, and I write for, you know, various newspapers and magazines, but I am at the moment working on a proposal for another book. I know from past experience that if you talk too much about what you're writing about, you can, you know, you can possibly jinx it. So,
okay.
So
but it is, watch this space.
It is, yeah, but it is, it's another non-fiction, and it is based on my experiences, but obviously it will be in a different way because, you know, it's not my kind of, it's not a memoir again.
Okay.
But it is about life experiences and women, and I'll keep you posted anyway.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.